Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence. I am your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group, and of course, the proud host of Via E. And for season three, you know, I had a ringer on. Every time I see Dr. now, Dr. Lisa Slayer, every time I see her, she just absolutely just puts me in tears because of laughter. And if you want to talk about, you know, someone that just uplift your spirits, your soul, I can guarantee you every time that I engage with Dr. Slayer, I am going to leave doing the three things that Jim Valvano always say: you laugh, you cry, and I forgot what the third one is, but yes, laugh and cry, right? But Jim Valvano always talks about the third one. But it is an absolute honor to bring Dr. Lisa Slayer here on Voices for Excellence. I have known Lisa, how long? I mean, Dr. Slayer, I'm sorry. How long?
You call me Lisa. How long have we known each other? Oh my gosh. That's a bit.
Has to be at least 10 years, right? Over 10 years.
Anything over 5 years is 10 years. I don't even know.
Yeah, this was when you was a special education director. We've known each other, and then moving into when you became assistant superintendent. But anyways, like I said, Lisa is just one of the well-respected educators across the country, well-known throughout her home state of New Jersey with her impact, both what I like to say in this ed tech world, but also in the traditional pre-K through 16 world as well. And a instructional expert, we're going to go deep in the multi-tier system and support and other instructional areas. Also, what does special education look like in the AC stage of education? But without further ado, I want to introduce you to the founder and CEO of LMS Education Consulting, Dr. Lisa Slayer. Doc, I get to, first of all, congratulations from me and VFE on achieving your doctorate degree. So I'm so happy to put Doc in front of your name. But Lisa, it's just an absolute honor as a friend to have you on VFE. And I'm so looking forward to this nerd conversation.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Michael. I'm so happy to be here and excited to talk with you and just to share expertise. I know when you and I get together, we love to talk about our pedagogy, our practice. So I'm looking forward to this conversation and getting down. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. And let's not forget laughing and crying, right? Because you always leave me laughing and crying. At the last conference and every other conference that we attend to, some of our mutual friends that we just absolutely love, impact in education, and you're right along in that vertical. But I've been waiting for this question, Dr. Slayer, all right? And I don't know if I'm going to get a Michael Lisa response to this, or Connor Dr. Slayer response, or am I going to get a hybrid of both? But like I said, you bring a divergent skill set and this level of expertise. I like to say a multidimensional expertise in the education ecosystem. But as education leaders and stakeholders engage with Dr. Lisa Slayer, what song described your excellence and inclusive leadership signature in the field?
My song. Let's see. If I had to describe everything you just encompassed, right? If I think about leadership, I think about inclusive practices, I think about moving the needle for kids, I think about equity and access. Two songs come to mind.
Mm-hmm.
First song, I would say, and I heard this song about 3 years ago. I was preparing for a presentation, and it was after COVID, literally right after COVID, for women at a conference. And I played the song. I woke up in the morning. I said, what is a song that is going to just make everybody no holds bar, stay true to yourself, follow your passion, and just celebrate yourself with no inhibitions? And I found the song, This Is Me. And there's an amazing video from The Greatest Showman, This Is Me, with the woman, the lead woman that's singing the song. And if you haven't seen it, Michael, it is amazing. It will bring you to tears. It's about her standing behind the podium and being afraid to come out and be unapologetically herself. Mm-hmm. And the song opens up with her reserved. And then at the end, the entire room is cheering and singing. And it's just, so I think about, you know, when we're leading a district, a system, that you really have to be unapologetically yourself. You really have to know what's right for kids. You have to be visible. You have to walk the walk and talk the talk. And so, you know, if I could say anything to leaders out there, whether you're an educator or a leader, just be who you are and make sure that those decisions you make are really going to help move the needle for every student. And then I recently heard this song by Drew Holcomb called Find Your People. It is a great song. It's about surrounding yourself by people who are true to yourself and true to you, who accept you for what you are and who share your same passion. So those are two great songs that I think really emulate, you know, what inclusivity is, but really from the lens of a leader, just be who you are and stay true to your values at your core.
You know, I love the correlation between the two songs, Dr. Slayer, that you highlighted. One, and I think that this theme around being unapologetically yourself, I think we have to now really take that that critical stance in education where we can't have, I like to say, this leadership facade
right.
perpetuating some of the traditional nodes, some of the elements within our operating model from the BC stage of education, because we know that's going to continue to exacerbate opportunity and access gaps for our students now, Generation Z and Generation Alpha. But I really love the aspect or the notion of finding your people who share your passion. And I think that in order for us to really change, right, to defy the standardization that we're so used to in education, we need to find a cadre of leaders and education stakeholders as well as constituents, right, who share the same passion to be unapologetically ourselves in this coalition to expedite the work that is needed in this AC stage of education. Truly appreciate that. But being unapologetically yourself, Dr. Slayer, you have no problems doing that. No problems. I thought you were going to, and to my audience out there, Dr. Slayer and I, we were text messaging each other, and I really thought you were going to come out with De La Soul. You know, it's a myself, man. I,
no. I left that out. Nope. That was a great song, great band, brings back the college days. But that, no.
You left that out. I was waiting for that, Dr. Slayer. But yes, unapologetically yourself and finding the people that share that same passion to move the work forward. But going back to the outset, right? You have a wide array of expertise, and your journey has crossed many verticals in this education sector, right? Most recently serving as the Vice President of Educational Partnerships for Stages Learning, and then in the pre-K through 16 vertical, Assistant Superintendent of Schools for the Mount Olive School District under the leadership of Dr. Robert Zwicky. But now as the founder and CEO of LMS Education Consulting, one, what is the core mission and vision of your consultative services? And also two, you know, Lisa, and I'm putting on my superintendent hat on, I want to bring LMS Consulting Services in my district, right? What does success look like for my district or even for my schools that engage with your services?
Right. Great. Great questions. You know, so as far as, you know, LMS Educational Consulting, you know, really what I believe, you know, that the company believes in is really helping districts and leaders, educators build their capacity, building capacity within, right? Building the capacity to help support every teacher, every student, every family, every parent, every community organization that's involved in the public sector and helping you. Because really, you know, I know we're going to talk about MTSS, but really, those are like the tenants. So, you know, MTSS is all about, Michael, the structures and the systems you put in place. So the onus is on the school system, right? So what are we doing as a school district to make sure that every student has access to equitable resources, every teacher has access to resources and materials to help make them or help them teach and really impact students that they serve? And what kind of types of professional development are we providing our teachers, our staff, our educators, our superintendents? How are we bringing the community in? I mean, so really the tenets behind the work in my consulting firm is really looking at inclusive practices across the board. I do a lot of work with, I go into school districts, I do special education audits, I meet with all the building admin, I meet with teachers, I meet with the, you know, the key invested parties, the people who are the boots on the ground. And I really get a feel for the culture of the school, I get a feel for their inclusive practices, what their strengths are, and what are some areas that we can help refine and really help move the needle for every student. That's really the tenets of my work. And I do a lot of work around MTSS, going in the same thing. I'll do a deep dive. I'll meet with district admin, superintendents, assistants, directors, and ask them, what is it that we're trying to accomplish here? What is your goal for your students? And so that's really the heart of it and where we start. And, you know, I've had the pleasure of working with several school districts across New Jersey. And it's been such a pleasure and such an honor that they open their doors for me and they allow me to come in. And, you know, we just cultivate this relationship. And, you know, I really do truly love everybody that I work with. It's really an honor. I feel very blessed to have this opportunity.
Yeah, Dr. Slayer, your work is really stretching beyond New Jersey as well, the impact that you're having. One theme that I highlighted in your response, and I think that's very intentional, but it is obsolete in a lot of services that we might encounter as superintendents and even district level leaders, is professional development, professional learning for superintendents. Lisa, you know, and I know we serve, you know, whether it be at the superintendent level, chief academic officer, whether it be assistant superintendent of teaching and learning, whatever the title is, there really isn't, you know, systemic and streamlined professional learning that cognitively challenges our practices so that we'll be able to have impact at the systems level, right? So if you can, this is a sub question. Sure. And I really like this, Lisa, because I think it's needed holistically now. Your services providing professional development and growth for superintendents and C-suite leaders or executive cabinet levels. Expand on that, because you lived it and now you're actually providing it for superintendents, CAOs, assistant superintendents, and C-suite leaders.
Yep. Thank you, Michael, for saying that, because that's one of the hardest things I find when I'm meeting with district level admin, whether they're CAOs, you know, superintendents. I always ask the question, what professional development do you need to help you become a better leader? Yeah. And that is a really hard question for them to answer. And I find that amazing. Like, how do you grow professionally? I mean, everybody can say the books they're reading, you know, the people they follow. There are tremendous school leaders out there on LinkedIn, on social media platforms. I mean, I follow tons of superintendents. I'm sure you and I share a lot of the same people in our feed. But, you know, it's really oftentimes, and this goes to building principles too, Michael, they spend so much time worrying about their teachers.
Yeah.
Superintendents, you spend a lot of time cultivating your relationships with board members, community members, you know, your central office, your team. But it's really important for us to stop and take a look at, okay, in order to make sure that I'm providing equitable access for all my staff, right? To make sure my kids have all these amazing outcomes and inputs that can help them. What am I doing for myself professionally to help me really understand what it is that I need to help myself grow? And more often than not, that's really a hard question. I found it really difficult for building principals to answer. Like, gosh, like no one's ever asked me that before.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that's what I mean about being unapologetically yourself. Like, stop and take the time to reflect and see what you need to help improve your practices. Because if we need to be there for our staff, and I think, you know, as leaders, it's hard because you're timing, you know, you're strapped for time.
Absolutely. You
know, we all need more time.
We,
you know. You know, and it's great. I get to work alongside superintendents, you know, and taking a look at school goals and how to build them out and how to break it down to, you know, the district level, the school level, the classroom level. So it's really, you know, and I really listen to you as a superintendent. When I come in to meet with you, I hear what your you know, opportunities for practice are and how can I provide you the support you need with the services that I know I can help you with.
Yeah, Dr. Slayer, you get it, right? Because you lived it, you sat in the seats, you understand exactly. And I really loved, because I always like to catalog specific categories in these tiers. And when I think about it from a superintendent lens, pedagogy, andragogy, and heterogogy, right? We see most of our time deliberately in that heterogogy category where it's self-directed learning. And I was just in a phone conversation yesterday, and we were talking about the shifts from at the site-based level of how we can improve, whether it be shared or individual capital around instructional leadership in lieu of managerial leadership. We really have to move towards those dimensions. And I really love how you unpack that, because most of our time, as you know, is spent with superintendents or spent with board members.
Right.
But now, you know, as I look at this from this 22nd century dimension, traditional board of governance has to shift to leadership governance, where there's that synergy of social capital between the superintendent and his or her board of education from this leadership, where
right
now there really isn't any variability around capabilities of understanding specific goals and objectives within the strategic operating plan. But Dr. Schlier, now I really want to get into your instructional expertise, right? So now we're both going to kind of put our PK through 12 or PK through 16 hats on, because I want to focus this around one of your specific levels of expertise, which is the MTSS model, right? So we're approaching now year five. January 2025 will be the five-year anniversary of the historical shutdown in the world, and specifically, as we know, during that time in education. But in the AC stage of education after COVID-19, what elements or tenets of the MTSS model must be intentionally disrupted? And I want to add that word, unapologetically disrupted, to address the new needs of our students, i.e. Generation Z and Generation Alpha, where within the next 3 years, Generation Alpha will be matriculating out of the pre-K-12 lineage, and it will be in totality Generation Alpha. So how do we become more intentional to align exactly what you were talking about, professional
sure
learning, for leaders and teachers to redefine, and here's the hard part, Dr. Schlier, mindsets,
right?
Mindsets, shared mental models around this whole MTSS framework.
Sure. You know, I think the number one most important tenet in the MTSS framework is really your core tier one instructional practices. So a lot of the work I do when I go into districts and we talk about and we look at and we unpack what structures they already have in place here in the districts that I work with is making sure that they have, that teachers have at their fingertips, right? Core literacy and reading, you know, math programs at their fingertips, resources to help them differentiate instruction, equity of access to professional development that's going to help guide them and build their, you know, their understanding of what does tier one look like? How should I be focusing my efforts to make sure I can reach every student? And so when you think about that, you know, when you say every student, it's daunting. Like, how do I, as a classroom teacher, meet every single student? Well, that really falls on us as district leaders. How do I, as a district leader, make sure that my staff, my teachers, my families have access to all of these components that really help build a community? And what I find in some of the districts, Michael, and you may have seen this too, is that there needs to be alignment. So you start with your district goal, right? Everything that you do has to tie into those goals you have in the district. And oftentimes things are operating and running in silos. And the schools and the teachers and the staff there's no vertical, you know, articulation happening. Like, here's what we expect to happen here. So if this takes place at elementary schools, how does that push into the middle school? How does that push into the high school? And then how does that push into post-secondary outcomes for kids? So the heart of my work in working with districts, you know, a lot of districts want support on inclusive practices, right, for special education students. Yes, inclusive practices, number one. But if we're really honing in on our tier one instruction, you can reach and meet the needs of every student, whether it's academics or behavioral. And that's the biggest piece. And oftentimes, you know, districts say, well, I don't have people. I don't have the manpower. You do. You have staff there. You know, I think there's a misconception out there when students who need a little additional support beyond your classroom, they think, well, a tier two, I need a specialist. But your teacher is able to provide those supports. It's how are you structuring your classroom? So helping districts move away from, you know, the teacher is standing and delivering. And that's so hard to do when teachers are used to teaching how they've always taught. Well, kids aren't learning that way.
Right.
And it goes back to your quote that you talked about. And I'll let you say your quote because it's amazing. But how do we shift that to make sure that kids and teachers have access to move beyond just the standing and delivering? Where are those inclusive practices, a small group instruction, and helping districts and seeing them where they are in the beginning to where they wind up at the end? is just beautiful synergy. I mean, it's really just being vulnerable and being willing to admit that, you know what, here's where I need support. Here's what I know, but here's where I need to make some gains.
Yeah. Yeah.
Develop relationships. So.
Yeah, Dr. Slear, excellent, excellent point. And I loved your response when you said the need for vertical articulation specifically and that first tenet of the MTSS framework around core instruction. That's a systems level approach, a systems level mindset to be able to have that level of connectivity and that vertical coherence or articulation as you're stating it. And then also too, you know, clarifying a misconception where tier two can be delivered by the classroom teacher, him or herself. And this is where I always say that transition from classroom teacher to classroom practitioner, because you're able to apply a multitude of different methods and pedagogical strategies to be able to address and reach our students as well. But yes, the quote that you're talking about, I love saying it, right? And you know what? It's so true when you think about it. Is that our kids are living in a world of Uber, Lyft, Amazon Prime, but they're educated in a system that emulates Blockbuster. So that automatically creates that disjunction. And it actually brings this level of realization to the conundrum that we're facing in the context of the construct of the operating model. And if we go deeper into the sub processes within the operating model, that's where you see these disjunctions in the context of pedagogy, structures and systems. Even now, how you're defining with your work some of the traditional practices within the MTSS model. But another thing I keep thinking about is this alignment of how we're strengthening. This is another element of learning for our teachers and leaders, is that the shifts that we're seeing by incorporating the science of reading theoretical construct into the MTSS model, moving away from some of those balanced elements that we're so used to, where now they're the explicitness and the systematic approach to instruction within the structured model and how that makes an adjustment within the MTSS framework. That's another episode, Lisa. I want to be back on that. We will have Dr. Slear back for that, because I need her to unpack that. But get into now, I like to say, your second tier expertise, which is around special education. And we haven't here on VFE really unpacked special education, specifically now in the AC stage of education. You have this deep acumen around state policy, national legislation regarding special education. If there's a new policy that comes out, everybody knows, they call you and say, hey, what does this mean? But in the AC stage of education, how can policy, practices, and systems improve using now, when bringing the element of generative intelligence systems and AI for this segment and population? So moreover, Lisa, how can it close opportunity gaps that has historically stymied the growth of these students in our model?
Right. You know, it's funny, because I was just at a school district this morning in New Jersey, a pretty large school district, meeting with the building admin team and asking them, have you used AI? And they're like, no, we haven't really played around with it. You know, so I'll go into that in a minute. But I am thinking about a time when I had a presentation I did with 70 paraprofessionals. And I kind of talked to them about how to reach and meet the needs of every learner that you encounter. And so I introduced them to Claude and ChatGPT. And I asked them, I said, you know, do you know AI? Have you used it? Even though we're all using it in some fashion, we have Alexa, or, I mean, you know, we're using our computers and our cell phones all the time. It's like, you know, when you start talking about something, all of a sudden you're on Facebook and you have, you know, ads for what you were talking about. So I said to the paraprofessionals, I said, okay, ask me a question. What is something that you're struggling with one of your students? And one of the paraprofessionals said, I don't really know all the time how to meet the needs of my nonverbal autistic student. Yeah. I said, okay, let's plug the question in. And I put in the question, and then I always ask AI, is there anything else you need from me to help, you know, generate an answer? And, you know, Michael, within 10 seconds, you have this whole litany of different strategies that you can employ.
Absolutely.
I think it's teaching our staff, our educators, even our leaders who are, you know, apprehensive to dabble in it. And that was like today with some of the leaders I was with. I said, well, have you developed your back to school letter yet to your community? He's like, you know, he or she said no. And I said, well, look, let me show you something really quickly, how to do it. And then you can plug in your PBIS and all of this. So it's really just opening the doors and taking your knowledge that you have and really consolidating and making concise and giving you an output that you can help, which is going to better the outcomes for you. Because when we are bogged down with paperwork, okay, I've got 26 kids in my classroom, but how do I differentiate? And here's the reading standard I have to do. There's so many platforms out there. So I try to show the teams I work with them. I infuse AI in my presentations. Yeah. And of course, I'm not saying that's the answer, but I think at this day and age, you have to be using it as a support system.
Yeah.
And of course, there's always checks and balances. You don't want to take things verbatim, but it's really a time saver. Whether you're writing a present level for a student with an IEP, and you can say, here's the data, you know, develop an example of a present level for my student who's in sixth grade, and here's where he or she is functioning academically and behaviorally, and it generates it for you.
Yeah. And Dr. Sawyer, I love how you created this intentional equilibrium between artificial intelligence and human intelligence.
Right.
I always get this, always hear this comment that, oh yeah, you know, because of automation and, you know, the increase or the percentage of different aspects of society being automated, that teachers are going to be automated. And I'm like, no, one of my professors, Kareem Akhani, always stated that AI won't replace humans, right, but humans with AI will replace humans without AI. And it's so true. And you always talk, you elaborate, and you know how I think, Lisa. I thought immediately of Moore's Law, right? That equilibrium between humans and machines. Take that out, put in the education context, and that balance between teachers and AI. Always look at that. But you address something that I think is so critical, right? And it goes back to a 1985 study by Benjamin Bloom around the two sigma problem, where one-to-one, he called tutoring, will improve achievement by two standard deviations. Now, with artificial intelligence and a variety of intelligence systems, that study can be challenged. What I like to say is two sigma prosperity, where now we can exceed the two standard deviations if we figure out what that equilibrium is between AI and our classroom practitioners and leaders. But I just heard something, Lisa, and I think you would appreciate this, is that now they're developing small language models,
right,
from the generative intelligent systems family, where that now those small language models, which will be coming out fairly soon, I believe, within the next year or so, there's actually going to be generative systems that will improve the efficiency of special education. You will be seeing that coming out soon. Yes, you know, Lisa, I don't know how I engage or get into all these conversations, but anything new I hear, I just write it down like, wow. So that will that will be coming out soon. So now they're looking at approaches of using AI and specific generative systems to be able to improve the efficiencies of certain departments. And I know that special education will be one, but so important of what you're saying, that of outlining an impact in AI to address some of these critical gaps that we're seeing in specific segments in education. But I want to go on to another common theme that I love to talk about with you all the time. It's the one word in education. And I always say leadership matters every single morning when I post my leadership tip. Is leadership,
right?
Yeah. Is leadership. So the AC stage, right? The AC stage of education, how leadership is shifting, right? It's shifting exponentially because of the economic changes that we're seeing in the world, these radical shifts, you know, with regards to disposition and attributes within Generation Z and Generation Alpha. So because we're seeing these shifts that are happening in our natural environment, or the environmental factors that are shifting within the economy, the residual effect is you're going to see these changes within our traditional brick and mortars of schools, and then also within learner organizations as well. Dr. Sawyer, I want you to outline a vision of what leadership has to be in this evolving of what I want to call not VUCA world, Unweis world. And Unweis meaning uncertain, volatile, intersectionality, complex, and exponential. What does leadership look like in this Unweis world?
Sure. You know, but I think today leadership, when you talk about leadership, Michael, you could talk about it from leadership from the district level, right? You're chief academic officer, you're head of schools, you're superintendent. But you've got leadership, when you look at a public school ecosystem, there's leadership all over, right? You've got the top down, the central office leadership, then you have your directors, you've got building, you have leadership among your colleagues, you have teacher leadership, you've got those teachers that people want to follow, they want to emulate. You know, so when you look at leadership from the lens of a superintendent and how I see it changing is really stopping and taking the time, like I talked about earlier, for yourself and looking at what can I do for myself? If these are my belief systems and this is what I value and this is what I hold true, how do I make sure that everything I'm doing as a leader is aligned from all of our systems and processes? When you don't have that alignment where everything comes down and ties into your goal, you know, whether it's a goal for, you know, your academic goals, your behavioral goals, your systems goals, your structures, your SOPs, everything that you're doing as a district, it all has to come out because everything we do leads to student achievement, right, and success. And so, you know, as leaders say, I just think, you know, making sure that we are streamlined, that we are not putting so much on the plates of teachers and staff where they feel that it can't be done. I think, you know, post-COVID, you know, companies were so generous to open their doors and allow us to use these resources and these products. And we had some amazing, amazing opportunities there. But making sure that we stop and slow down and look at, okay, what is it that I want to do for my team, my parents, my teachers, my direct colleagues, my students, and really being laser focused and not, you know, casting your net too wide. So you can't meet and reach every person that's under your, you know, supervision. It's an enormous job as a superintendent. You know, it's a very rewarding job. I mean, I never sat in that seat. I sat in the assistant superintendent seat. You know, I had a chance to see what the superintendent did. You know, I work with superintendents now all over the place. And it's a huge undertaking because you spend so much time managing the relationships of your board that you don't want to lose sight who are the most important people that we serve is our kids. So just really strategic alignment and just making sure you're not biting off more than you can chew.
Absolutely. And to my audience, that is an answer that you want to be able to replay again. And you want to unpack that very slowly, because roughly I count about four or five different, whether it be strategies or ideas, that can be incorporated into your practice. Dr. Slair, we use BFE primarily, or the goal is to create an asynchronous professional learning environment for leaders, teachers, education, stakeholders, edtech CEOs and startups, incumbent Education 500 companies, to be able to now improve their products or practices within their specific vertical. And this right here, the answer that you provided, is one of those answers that you want to go back and unpack slowly, because A, you talked about how leadership is all over. That right there is one of those statements that you can be able to unpack at a doctoral level class. What does leadership all over looks like? What is leadership all over within your learning organization, specifically around how do you create leadership amongst your stakeholders as well? I really loved how you stated around the alignment of systems and core processes, because the ultimate output is around student achievement, but streamlined, not overwhelming your educators, laser focused, and strategic alignment. Now, Dr. Slair, I just want you, before we get into our final question, streamlined, not overwhelming teachers, laser focus, and strategic alignment. In totality, can you unpack that? Because that is ultimately the utopia that we want to be able to reach in this education sector. So, and those four are very, very important where we want to go to. What does that look like from a leadership lens in practice?
Sure. I mean, I think having your eye on your outcome and what it is that you want. I mean, I think our number one job, you know, I think it was maybe a your presentation or something we were at together, and somebody showed, they had on the screen, they had, you know, the nation at risk, the picture of that cover. They had, you know, the race to the top and CLL. Was that your slide?
No, that was my presentation. Yeah.
I mean, it's just amazing. If you look at that, if you go back and read A Nation at Risk and look at where we are today, what gains have we made since then? And where are we still falling short? And I think looking at that, I mean, you know, if I was an educator today, a teacher, and I opened up the newspaper and everything I read is about how poor our kids are doing in math and reading, why am I waking up to come to work every day? I think we have to make sure that we're not emphasizing that when we're leading our districts and our teachers and saying, instead of saying, here is where we didn't do well, look at how we move the needle in this area. Yeah. Really helping your teams focus on, you know, yes, we all know standardized tests are high stakes, but underneath all of that, there are students making growth and outcomes. Whether it's moving the needle 2 to 5% in a certain subgroup, it's making sure you're paying attention to how you're not only are every student's doing, but looking at those subgroups and making sure that there's alignment across the board. And at the end of the day, number one, two things that we want for our students and staff and families is safety, right? That's our priority. And also achievement. I mean, the best day in public school is the first day of kindergarten and graduation. I mean, and we have only that time in between that to help create these beautiful children that are going to go out and be successful, you know, post-secondary endeavors, whether it's college and career. And it's an awesome job. It's hard, but I think we just need to stay laser focused and really celebrate all the success that we've seen over the years. And it can only get better. We can only continue to move the needle.
Absolutely. I loved how you bookend both, where you talk about that first day of kindergarten and the last day of graduation. I had a visual context of my own son think about that. But a previous guest that we had on here, Dr. Slayer, Tom Vander Ark, he is one of the architects, as well as a lead author of the No Child Left Behind Act under the Bush administration. And one thing that he said, that if he could change, right, or if there was more time or more resources to be able to support this legislative mandate, he would have moved away from absolute achievement and focus more on the growth of schools, the growth of students collectively as well. But I want to highlight something about some of the assessments before we get into the last question. And this is just more of kind of like broad research, is that standardized assessments only assess 50% of the brain, which is your left brain. And when we disaggregate that data metric to a granular level, students only use 15% of their mastery outcomes on a standardized assessment. So here's this essential question: how do we redefine, or what does the reimagination of our evaluation system look like when only the standardized assessment truly prepares our students for the economy of 15%?
Right.
15%. So that's something that definitely have to take a look at. But Lisa, you made it, man. Last question.
Oh, I did?
Wow.
No, but I love that topic that you just talked about, because I think, you know, not to interject before you ask the last question, but, you know, part of the role as a district leader, right, is cultivating that relationship with your board members, right? And so when you dissect everything and help them understand what you just said about standardized assessments and the high stake tests, and they know that, of course, you want your district to do well, of course, 100%, that's a no-brainer. But having your boards understand the growth that is made on your internal assessments, and when you can see that growth within, you may not always see it on those high stake tests, but when you have boards that understand all of that you just spoke of, and you can look at your internal district data and you can show how all your groups are moving, your subgroups, whether you're looking at your, you know, free and reduced lunch students, your special education population, your Black, Hispanic, those are what are important things to look at. What did those groups of students, what growth did they make from the beginning to the middle and to the end? And that should be celebrated. And sometimes that's often forgotten.
Absolutely, Dr. Slayer. Well stated. And I think that, you know, it goes back to a mutual book that we both love, Leading Change by John Cotter. And I believe it's the fourth or it's the fifth step of his change management process is celebrating short-term wins sure. that you highlighted. But last question, you made it. Wow. You just shrugged me off like this, Dr. Slayer. But I don't know if I can contain Lisa to three words right now. I know there have been many rule breakers, Dr. Slayer, many rule breakers on this. So as I state to everybody that comes on VFE, take it as it is. But what three words do you want today's audience to leave our podcast episode regarding excellence in education for all?
So do you want me to be unapologetically myself or a professional? No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. Three words. I would say, honestly, Michael, keep at it.
Yeah.
Keep at it. Don't give up. Time is now. I mean, this is it. Like, this is the year, I think, that we are, you know, out the post-COVID. This is the year that I really, truly believe that we're going to start to see some movements with our kids. Really do. So, you know, keep at it. You know, don't give up. I mean, cast your network, cast your wide. I mean, there are so many phenomenal district leaders out there to follow and to look at that are producing so many beautiful things. And everybody, as you know, Michael, will help each other out. I mean, at the end of the day, it's all of our jobs to take care of the students and the teachers that we serve. So.
You kept it simple, Dr. Slayer. Keep at it. Yes. Yes, it's so good to have you on. But before we even go, roommate, we have many viewers. We have many people that watch VFE. If somebody wants to reach out to you, whether it be for professional services, to expand upon this episode, or just more on the lines, just to be a thought partner with you, with them, how would they be able to get in contact with you?
They can. My contact information is on LinkedIn.
Okay.
So you can find me on LinkedIn, Lisa Schlier, and my contact information is there. They can message me. I believe my cell phone is on there, my email. You know, I'm open for anything. So awesome. It's been great.
No, thank you, Dr. Lisa M. Schlier. Now, I wanted to tell everybody again, I just want to say this to you, Lisa. Congratulations and welcome to the doctoral family.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It was a 4-year making and I'm glad it's done. It's been a great pleasure and I've been really blessed for my father who's 85 to watch me on this journey. And, you know, two things, Michael, I was taught that people can never take away from you is your integrity and your education. So
absolutely. Keep at it. And it was so good to see your husband and kids.
Oh yeah.
Standing in the background, they were just standing, smiling, just waiting, and you're just getting it. So, you know, definitely tell your family I said hello. Just a great, great family. And we are going to keep at it, Dr. Slayer. We're definitely going to do that. So thank you for coming on VFE, my friend. I will see you really soon. I would probably say within the next 6 to 8 weeks, and I just can't wait to laugh with you.
Sounds good. Perfect. Thank you so much for this opportunity. I really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun.
Absolutely. And on that note, onward and upward, everybody. Have a great evening.